एवं कर्म विशुद्धया विशुद्ध सत्त शांकर हृदयाकाशो शरीरे ब्रह्मणि भगवती वासुदेवे महापुरुष रूप पदक्षणे श्रीवत्स कौस्तव बनमालाद दर्वदाधिपलक्षिते निज पुरुषिताने आत्मनि पुरुषरूपेण विरोचमान उच्चस्तरान भक्तिरनुदीन मेध मान रया जायत. So it's in a prose form, so we can't recite together. We'll just read it through. Translation by Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. In this way, being purified by ritualistic sacrifices, the heart of Maharaj Bharat was completely uncontaminated. His devotional service unto Vasudeva, Lord Krishna, increased day by day. Lord Krishna, the son of Vasudev, is the original personality of Godhead, manifest as the super soul, Paramatma, as well as the impersonal Brahman. Yogis meditate upon the localized Paramatma situated in the heart. Jnanis worship the impersonal Brahman as the supreme absolute truth, and devotees worship Vasudev, the supreme personality of Godhead, whose transcendental body is described in the Shastras. The body is decorated with Srivatsa. His body is decorated with the Srivatsa, the coastal jewel, and flower garland, and his hands hold a conch shell, disc, club and lotus flower. Devotees like Narada always think of him within their hearts. Lord Vasudev or Sri Krishna, the son of Vasudev, is the supreme personality of Godhead. He is manifest within the hearts of the yogis in his Paramatma feature, and he is worshipped as impersonal Brahman by Jnanis. The Paramatma feature is described in the Shastras as having four hands holding disc, conch shell, lotus flower and club, as confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.8. Kechit swa dehantara hridayavakashe pradesha matram purusham vasantam chaturbhujam kunja rathanga shankha gadadharam dharanaya smaranti. Paramatma is situated in the hearts of all living beings. He has four hands which hold four symbolic weapons. All devotees who think of the Paramatma within the heart worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the temple deity. They also understand the impersonal features of the Lord and his bodily rays, the Brahman effulgence. In this way, being purified by ritualistic sacrifices, the heart of Maharaj Bharat was completely uncontaminated. His devotional service unto Vasudev, Lord Krishna, increased day after day. Lord Krishna, the son of Vasudev, is the original personality of Godhead, manifest as the super soul, Paramatma, as well as the impersonal Brahman. Yogis meditate upon the localized Paramatma situated in the heart. Jnanis worship the impersonal Brahman as the supreme absolute truth. The devotees worship Vasudev, the supreme personality of Godhead,
whose transcendental body is described in the Shastras. His body is decorated with Sri Vatsa, the Kaustubha jewel, and a flower garland, and his hands hold a conch shell, disc, club, and lotus flower. Devotees like Narada always think of him within their hearts. So, Bharat Maharaj's character and activities are being described here. He was the son of a very, very exalted king, Rishabdev, who was actually an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Rishabdev, he retired from household life and accepted Vanaprastha, left home. And before retiring from home, he instructed his sons. He had 100 sons, and out of those 100 sons, again, Bharat was the eldest, so he succeeded the throne. And 9 other sons also accepted the path of renunciation and became yogis, the best of the yogis. They were known as Navajogendra. And so Bharat Maharaj's activities are being described. And from Bharat Maharaj, the land of India has become known as Bharatvarsha. And he is also the predecessors of the Pandavas. Therefore, from time to time in Bhagavad Gita, we notice that Arjuna is being addressed as Bharata, because he came in the line of Bharat Maharaj. He was a descendant of King Bharat. Therefore, he has been described as Bharat. So, yesterday's verse described how Bharat Maharaj was involved in activities. No, actually, I made a mistake. Arjuna is known as Bharat, not according to this Bharat. He was described as Bharat because it came as a son of Dushyanta and Shakuntala. He was also Bharat. And so this is another line. Anyway, it was just a slip. So, and I thought I'd better correct it as soon as I recalled. So Bharat Maharaj was, previous verse, it has been described how Bharat Maharaj was involved in various ritualistic sacrifices. And we discussed yesterday how those sacrifices, although offered to different demigods, but the actual purpose of the sacrifices was to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Different demigods like Indra, Chandra, Varun, Surya, they are different expansions or different limbs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, when one serves the limbs, actually the purpose of that service is to please the original personality. And in this respect, Prabhupada gave the example that when one massages somebody's feet, he doesn't really just serve the feet, he massages the feet to give pleasure or to serve the person. Feet are just a part of his body. Feet are his limbs. So by serving the limbs, one actually serves the personality. So similarly, by serving different demigods, Bharat Maharaj was actually serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the difference between a materialistic person or a karmi performing sacrifices and a devotee performing sacrifices. When a materialistic person performs sacrifices, he actually tries to please different demigods to derive some benefit out of them. Whereas when a devotee performs sacrifices, the purpose is actually to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devotee doesn't have any other business other than pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Even though he may apparently serve the demigods, different instructions in the scriptures clearly indicate there is no need to serve the demigods. Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita that less intelligent persons serve the demigods or worship the demigods to derive some material benefits. But those benefits are temporary. Antavantu phalam tesham tad bhavat alpamedhasham. Alpamedhasham means less intelligent people. So they serve the demigods to derive some temporary material benefit, like getting wealth or getting position or fulfilling certain desires. But Krishna also mentioned that the demigods grant the fulfillment, or the demigods fulfill the desires or prayers of their worshippers being approved by Krishna. They themselves do not have the ability to fulfill the desires. And therefore it has been described that it's better to serve Krishna directly. There is no need to go through the via medium. But sometimes we see that some individuals also serve the demigods or perform sacrifices to please the demigods, just like Bharat Maharaj did. But Bharat Maharaj's intention of serving the demigods was to serve the Supreme or please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And today's verse actually clearly mentions that by performing sacrifices which apparently was to please the demigods, Bharat Maharaj's heart became purified. And purification of heart means to become a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this verse also describes that one can perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead in three different ways: as the super soul in the heart, as the impersonal Brahma Jyoti or Brahman effulgence, spiritual effulgence, and as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam at the beginning also describes that point. Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam jajgyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdate. Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam. Those who are the knower of the truth, those who have understood or perceived the absolute truth, Tattva Vidas, they describe about the Tattvam, the absolute reality or the supreme absolute truth, as Brahma, Paramatma and Bhagavan. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti and Bhagavaniti Shabdati. Brahman is the impersonal bodily effulgence of the Lord. Paramatma is the localized super soul who is situated in everyone's heart as the witness of the living entity's activities, and Bhagavan as the supreme personality of Godhead. And here also this verse specifically describes that the yogis see the absolute truth or the supreme personality of Godhead as the Paramatma, super soul. The gyanis perceive him as impersonal Brahma Jyoti, and the devotees perceive him as the supreme personality of Godhead, who is decorated with flower garlands, and who is decorated with Kaustubha jewel and Srivatsa mark on his chest, and he holds four weapons. So, like four symbolic weapons, like conch shell, lotus, disc, and mess. So, now, in this way we can see that this perception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in three different ways is actually is a matter of perceiving from different distances. When we see the absolute truth, the spiritual reality from a distance, we see him as the effulgent, brilliant spiritual light. When we come a little closer, we see him as a super soul in the heart. And when we develop a real intimate relationship with him, then we perceive him as the supreme personality of Godhead. This also can be described or considered further as, generally, one initially tries to understand the absolute truth through knowledge. Jnana means knowledge. So knowledge initially is a deductive knowledge. Whatever we perceive with our senses, through that sense perception, we try to understand the absolute truth, who is actually beyond our sense perception. But due to lack of understanding, one may try to perceive him with his senses or his intellect. But that endeavor will ultimately lead to seeing him as a blinding light. This material nature is a nature of darkness, is a world of darkness. We can see that in this material nature, had the sun, moon and fire not been there, we wouldn't be able to see anything. This nature is a nature of darkness. But because of the sun, moon and electricity or fire, natad bhashayate surja na shashanka na pavaka. Surja means sun, shashanka means moon, and pavaka means fire. So it is because of these three things that we are able to, that there is some light in this world. Otherwise, this material nature is of eternal darkness. And actually, this light is coming originally from the sun. Moon is reflecting the rays of the sun, and fire is the energy of the sun that is preserved in the inflammable objects, mainly the trees. The trees accumulated the power from sun, energy from sun, which eventually is given out in the form of fire. So, in this way, it is because of the presence of the sun in this universe that there is some light. Otherwise, this place is in total darkness. And on top of everything, this place is actually in the darkness of ignorance. Real darkness is not casted by absence of light, but the actual darkness is the absence of knowledge. So, material nature is in eternal darkness. So, when one endeavors to understand the Absolute Truth, and if he can go beyond this material nature and come to the world of light, the spiritual world, due to austerities and penances, due to very earnest and arduous endeavor, then he sees the Brahman effulgence. But that perception of Brahman effulgence is actually blinding. Just like if a person had been in a dark place for a long, long time, if he is all of a sudden exposed to the midday sun, what will happen to him? That light of the sun, rays of the sun will blind him. So the endeavor of understanding the Supreme Absolute Truth through knowledge means through empiric knowledge, by relative perception, when we try to perceive the knowledge, to understand the truth, then one ends up perceiving the Brahma Jyoti. Now, when one reaches that point of blinding perception of Brahma Jyoti and he realizes that he has actually come to a dead end, then he would consider that by this external endeavor to perceive the Absolute Truth, I have come to this point of no return or come to a dead end. So then he would change his course. Like from making an external endeavor to understand the Absolute Truth, he makes an internal endeavor. And that is yoga. Yoga is the process of internalizing one's consciousness and perceiving the super soul in the heart. And when one achieves success in yoga, in samadhi, when one perceives one perceives the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the core of his heart as a super soul. So the external endeavor of jnanis lead them to perceive the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. The internal endeavor of perceiving the Supreme through the process of yoga leads one to perceive the Paramatma or Super Soul in the heart. And then when one perceives the Super Soul in the heart and he recognizes or he perceives him as the Supreme Soul, and he recognizes or he perceives himself as a minute little spiritual entity, then automatically he surrenders himself to the Super Soul. Because it is a natural tendency of an inferior to surrender unto the superior. So this surrender to the Supreme is the beginning of devotion. And when one surrenders himself unto the Lord and becomes a recipient of Lord's mercy, then the Lord reveals himself to him in his original identity as Bhagavan or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is how these are the three perceptions of the Absolute Truth results from three different approach to the Absolute Truth. So the Gyanis, they see the Absolute Truth from a great distance and they see him as the Brahmajyoti. The yogis see him as the Super Soul. They see from a little closer distance, but the devotees see him most intimately. Therefore, they get to see him as he is. In this respect, Prabhupada gave various examples. One example is seeing the sun from inside the room. We just see the light of the sun. When we are seeing, when we are inside a room, in a room, then we see the sun as light. When you come out of the room and look at the sun globe, then we see the sun as a sun planet, effulgent, radiant source of light. But when you go to the sun planet, there you will find that the sun planet is full of variety. And sun god is there, surrounded by his associates and entourage, paraphernalia and different other aspects of the sun planet. A similar example Prabhupada gave about seeing a train at night. We are standing in a platform. From a distance, we just see the light. Then we get to see the train itself. But when the train comes and stops on the platform and we get into the train, then we see that the train is full of passengers. And so this is how the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, also is perceived in different ways from our perceptions in relation to the distance. So, so the point that has been made here is that eventually by performing different sacrifices and other prescribed methods according to the scriptures, Bharat Maharaj became purified in heart and he perceived the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the Super Soul. And in this way, Bharat Maharaj made his spiritual advancement, and we will see how after a prolonged enjoyment for many, many years, Bharat Maharaj eventually, he was ruling over the entire earth planet. That is, it may sound fictitious that how can one person rule over the entire earth planet, but actually that is how it used to be in the past. A monarchy naturally leads to one supreme ruler, and even now different planets are actually ruled by different one ruler in each planet. Like sun planet is ruled by Vivashwan, moon planet is ruled by Chandra Dev. In this way, various personalities are the supreme rulers of different planets, and same was the case with Earth planet. But unfortunately, with the advent of the age of Kali, the system of monarchy became abolished, and eventually the world now is in the grip of democracy. And of course, in democracy, what to speak of one king? In democracy, everybody becomes the king. And so the system, the original system, has totally reversed in this age. But otherwise, in the original system for this planet, Earth planet, also was one ruler. How that was? Because the most powerful one used to rule over everyone else. The system was a Kshatriya, in order to a Kshatriya king, a warrior king, he would, in order to establish his supremacy, he would perform some sacrifice called Rajasuya sacrifice or Ashwamedha sacrifice, and he would send a challenge to other kings, and then the other king to whom the challenge was made, he had two options: either accept his authority and surrender to him, become his subordinate, or challenge him in a fight, in a battle. And in the battle, whoever would win, he would establish his supremacy in that way. And in this way, the most powerful king would establish his sovereignty over all other kings, and all other kings would become subordinate to him. And that was the system in the past. One may question that how they would travel to such great distance. So the answer to that also is, we should not think that we have become most advanced only in this age. Actually, people in the past were more advanced than we are. The space travel and other forms of travels were also prevalent those days. But unfortunately, since we are dealing with the history of only 1 or 2,000 years, we are judging the history or the situation of the world only from this perception of this 2,000 years, which means the history that has been written by the Western world. But Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharata, they describe about civilization, human civilizations, what to speak of thousands of years. They describe about human civilization that was there millions of years ago, billions of years ago. So time moves in cycle. Just as after every second, another second comes. After every minute, another minute comes. After every year, another year comes. So the time moves in a greater cycle, in the form of yugas. So after one yuga, another yuga comes. So that is how the human civilization been existing on this planet. And the informations, quite a considerable amount of information has been provided. in the Vedic scriptures. And if we receive those informations from the scriptures, we can only enrich ourselves with knowledge. And also through these scriptures we come across personalities like Bharat Maharaj who are extremely exemplary. And it is important that we have ideal characters in front of us to follow them and mold our lives according to them. In today's world, there is an acute lack of people with noble and upright characters. This world has become extremely, not only mediocre, this world today has become extremely degraded. Therefore, there is a need to have some ideals in front of us and mold our lives according to their examples. And that is how we can actually enrich ourselves in the true sense. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question? Yes.
This question regarding Bharat Maharaj who sacrificed to the different demigods ultimately to please Supreme Lord. To give an example, let's say there's a viceroy who comes to your country and you make it known to him, I'm actually serving you, not really to please you, but to actually please the king. That seems like not a very nice attitude.
Why not? Okay.
Just like...
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I get your point.
We can also see that we serve the Vaishnava, we serve the Vaishnava in the true spirit of pleasing him. I mean, maybe not even in the background that I'm wanting to serve the Lord, but I want to please him. So there seems to be two approaches to this. What is the proper mentality when we offer anything to the demigod?
As you gave the example, a viceroy, the ambassador, like you serve him ultimately to please the king, but that doesn't mean that you go and tell the person that, look, I don't care about you. Actually, it is him I'm concerned about. Right? That is not the attitude. The attitude actually is that I am serving you because of my loyalty to the king, and since you are representing the king, I am serving you. Right? You get the point. And when I am serving you, I go out of my way to please you. I mean, whatever is within my ability, I am prepared to do it for you. Similarly, as you are saying, serving the Vaishnavas. Like, it is not that, you know, when you are serving the Vaishnavas, we say, okay, I'm not actually serving you, Prabhu. I'm serving Krishna. The attitude actually is, our favorable attitude towards the devotee is like that. We love him, we care for him, we respect him, we honor him, because he's a devotee. And devotee means he is subservient to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? And we try our best to serve him and please him. And when the devotee becomes pleased, the Lord, who is omniscient, you know, he becomes pleased that they're serving my devotees.
Prabhupada gives the example, love me, love my dog.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, Chandrasekhar.
We just heard that the spiritual reality exists beyond sense perception. We cannot achieve it through our own efforts. So how come impersonalists, or those who at least realize the Brahmana fullness, how come they realize that realization, and even though it's imperfect or incomplete, it's still spiritual? So how do they attain that with their own efforts.
Well, this is more or less an hypothetical analysis of the gradual progress. But the underlying principle that is always there is that you have to have a spiritual master who guides you. Right? Whether you are an impersonalist jnani, whether you are a seeker of the Paramatma as a yogi or as a devotee. And it is the spiritual master who guides the individual through different stages. Like, for example, one is attracted to the process of jnana. So the spiritual master leads him, okay, go ahead, that is your passion, go ahead. But then when he comes to the, you know, that Brahman realization, as I said, the dead end, then the spiritual master tells him, okay, now you have no way to go further. Only way that is open to you now is go to the opposite direction. That is, internalize yourself through your yoga. Right? And then, when one perceives the super soul, then the spiritual master says, okay, now you can see, along with you there is the Supreme Personality, Super Soul. You can see how great He is and you can see how insignificant you are. So what are you going to do now? Surrender unto Him. Right? And then He leads him to the process of devotion. But that's the wonderful thing about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's gift in this age. He directly gave the process of devotional service. In other ages, devotion was extremely rare. For example, practically speaking, in other ages, one could become a devotee after achieving the yoga perfection. Generally. So, and you can see it's how difficult it could have been. But in this age, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and gave it to us directly. And that's why Prabhupada used to say that when one becomes a devotee, we have to understand that he has gone through all the spiritual practices and perfected them. Does it answer your question? Yes, Lalit Prabhu.
Excuse me, my voice.
Same is the problem with me.
Your explanation earlier about the different levels of realization raised my mind to spirits in the Bhagavad Gita, where the Lord says, out of compassion for them, I dwell within their hearts, destroy the thought of knowledge and darkness among ignorance. Now this verse was spoken in particular reference to the devotees, because prior to this verse, the verse was asked,
Tesham Shatatu Yuktanam.
Yeah. Okay. So the darkness that Krishna is talking about in this verse is the lack of realized knowledge. The lack of realized knowledge is not like book knowledge, but lack of realized knowledge. So based on your own realization, could you kindly explain to us how this process works? The process by which the Lord helps you within the heart, how it works, and how you feel when the Lord is helping you within the heart, how you actually work. What goes on to your mind, your consciousness, your heart, your entire being?
Okay. Tesham evanu kampartham aham agyanajam tamu Nashayami Atma Bhavastho Gyana Deepena Bhashyatha. In order to bestow my compassion, Evanu Kampartham, I dispel the ignorance of darkness and enlighten his heart with the torch, the knowledge, Gyana Deepena Bhashyatha. And you see, first of all, the spiritual reality is beyond our sense perception. Beyond our sense perception means not only our senses, eyes, ear, nose, touch and tongue. It is also beyond our internal sense, mind. It is beyond our intellect. So, with none of these material, physical faculties, we can perceive the absolute truth. But when we recognize our inability, that inability of inability to perceive the absolute truth by dint of our own endeavor, we surrender unto a devotee of the Lord, the spiritual master. That surrender actually invokes the Lord, inspires the Lord, compels the Lord to reveal Himself. Surrender not to the Lord Himself, surrender to His agent, to His devotee. And follow His instructions. And what He does, He also doesn't speculate something, but He brings the knowledge from the spiritual world, which is being projected into this world through the scriptures. Plus He has his realized knowledge. So that is how the process actually begins. We submit ourselves to the spiritual master, and the spiritual master starts to provide us with information about the spiritual reality. And He teaches us also the process of how to go there. And that process is devotional service. And when, in this way, although it is kind of not realized knowledge, although it is somewhat bookish knowledge, but still that knowledge is about the spiritual reality. We are reading the scriptures, we are getting some information from the about the spiritual sky. That knowledge is not realized, but it is intellectually perceived or intellectually grasped, that knowledge. Now that stage is called sadhana bhakti. Right? Practicing the process of devotional service by receiving the informations from a bona fide spiritual master is the sadhana bhakti. Now when you practice the sadhana bhakti sincerely, then at some point the Lord becomes, when He becomes pleased with us and bestows His mercy upon us, as He mentioned there, tesham evanukampartham, in order to bestow my mercy unto Him, all of a sudden we'll find ourselves, all of a sudden we'll find that knowledge, or the we will perceive the spiritual reality in the heart. So the practice of the process is there through sadhana bhakti. But then eventually the realization will come by the mercy of the Lord. And that's why time and time again we have been told that divvogyan hride prakashito. The transcendental knowledge will be revealed in the heart. And as in this verse also, jnana dipena bhashyata. It will be the heart will be illumined with the knowledge of the transcendental reality. So it is something like, you see, now we are perceiving everything with our senses, but the spiritual reality cannot be perceived with the material senses. Our spiritual senses will awaken, and we will be able to perceive the spiritual reality as it is.
Technically, can we say, technically, would it be correct to say that this mercy, the Lord activates within the jiva, the vidi shakti and the stomach chakra?
Well, I would rather give the example of Narad Muni. Narad Muni perceived the Lord No. He just saw him. And the sight of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was so wonderful that the joy that Narada Muni experienced by seeing him was so wonderful that he wanted to see him again and again and again. But the Lord just disappeared from his vision. And then he made some serious endeavor to perceive him again. But then finally he heard the voice of the Lord saying, in this life, you won't get to see me again. But in your next life, you'll come as my associate. So the point is that it is entirely up to the Lord. It is entirely up to the Lord how He is going to reveal Himself. So as devotees, we simply depend upon His mercy. That is one area where our endeavor will not be able to make any headway. Only endeavor we can make is the sadhana bhakti. We can practice the process of devotion and then just depend upon Him. Now how it will be, again, it is not a matter of our imagination. Because our imagination or our mental speculations are only material, right? But that is another reality altogether, right? Like, can anybody see the sun with a torchlight? Can one see the sun with torchlight? No. So what we have to do, from the light we can get an idea, from a torchlight or a lamp, we can get an idea what light is like. But when the sun comes up in the sky, then we get to see what the sun is like. Right? And then only we can see the sun. So similarly, we can perceive the Lord only when He, out of His causeless mercy, reveals Himself. Therefore, it is a matter of revelation. Yeah, it's a matter of revelation. He'll reveal Himself. With our speculation, with our imagination, we cannot go anywhere near Him. So therefore, what we have to do is, we have to just wait for the sun to come up in the sky. So similarly, in spiritual life, we have to just wait when the Lord will reveal Himself, and not become impatient. Right? Like a yogi, I perform so much austerities and I have to come back again. But the cobbler, at least someday the Lord will reveal Himself to me. No matter how many millions of lifetimes it may be, but someday I'll get to see Him.
Sometimes when we are chanting by the Lord's mercy, we feel a very strong connection in the heart. And even though we don't exactly see the Lord personally, somehow we are able to feel His presence through His energy. And makes us very happy and joyful. And that seems to be the source of our strength. So when one experiences that, is he actually receiving help from the Lord from within the heart?
Yeah. He gives us a taste by which we become fixed up. But then again, sometimes he'll put us to some other kind of test. But our business is just to stick to his lotus feet and never give it up. Sometimes he'll give us a relishable taste, right? And sometimes he'll also put us to a very bitter test. But we have to hold on to his lotus feet and never give up. Yes, Chitra.
The same story of Narada Muni. There's a description. description in the purport that Prabhupada says, because Narada Muni's service to the Bhaktivedantas, by their blessing, he was able to have a desire to see the Lord. Because he had a strong desire, the Lord fulfilled that desire.
Right. Yeah, because they were his gurus. You see, in spiritual life, we always need a spiritual master. Although formally, he was not initiated by them, but they led him to the spiritual path by giving him instruction and a taste. And from that he developed this earnest desire to see him. Yes?
Going back to that verse again, in the purport of that verse, I'm wondering why Prabhupada said in the purport that if one does not take advantage of the scriptures or the spiritual master, if he is sincere, Krishna will help him from within the heart.
Yeah, Krishna will inspire him within the heart and by which he'll lead him to a spiritual master. Because spiritual master, the mercy of the Vaishnava is a must for making spiritual advancement. And the more we make advancement, the more we realize the importance of that. Yes.
The verse mentions that by this process of sacrifice to the demigods, Bharat Maharaj became completely uncontaminated in his heart. But this doesn't seem to be one of the principal paths of the nine processes of devotion, Shravana, Kirtana, Vishnu. So it seems like, was this because it's of a different age that this was possible?
And Vishnu Smaranam was there. He was, when he was performing the sacrifices, the remembrance was there.
Then he got his ashram too.
Yeah, it's true.
Himself surrender of himself. He surrendered himself to remember the Lord in a sense.
They've interlinked actually. I mean, there may not be the description here, but probably when the hotras, the priests were offering the oblations, chanting the mantra, he was hearing, right? How different demigods are parts and parts, different limbs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus he was remembering the Lord by hearing. But to focus on these two is the most important, Shravanam and Kirtanam. And that's the process for this age.
Yeah, the description was also, I think, that he wanted to please the Lord, and the Prabhupada gave the example that even if a priest is doing something which may be inferior, but because the devotee wants to please the Supreme Lord, he goes does that. But he's doing it for the pleasure of the Lord, even though the priest may be thinking of something different.
Actually, Prabhupada mentioned that in yesterday, I mean in the purport of the previous verse. Let me see if I can. Yeah. A devotee may have a priest perform some karmakanda, and the priest may not be a pure Vaishnava, but because the devotee wants to please the Supreme Lord, he should not be criticized. I mean, even if the priest is not really that advanced, but because the devotee is advanced, you know, he will relate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and not to the demigods.
In the process, like when we go to India, sometimes visit a temple of Lord Shiva, maybe temple of Durga. Now, and we pay obeisances, but sometimes there they might give you some prasadam. Now, the prasadam might have been, this offering might be offered to Lord Shiva or Mother Durga in the spirit that they are supreme. And if this prasad from them is offered, this offering to us, even though it's been offered with a different, with an improper attitude, are we supposed to honor this?
That's why it has been described, it has been instructed not to take the prasad from demigods. Devotees involved in pure devotional practice do not take the prasads of demigods. On the other hand, the real worship of demigods is to give Krishna prasad to the demigods. Like yesterday we were discussing, Prajapati Prabhu mentioned that Prabhupada, some devotee asked about worshipping Ganesh, and Prabhupada said, yes, you can give him some Krishna prasad. That's the way to worship Ganesh. And also in India, in Kali temples, there are Shaligram Shila. First off, prasad of bhoga is offered to the Shaligram Shila, and then that is offered to Kali. But less intelligent people sacrifice goats to Kali and think that that is Kali's prasad. For them, Kali's trident is there. So I'll stop now. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.